Thank you, Rich.
Come on over. Yes, thanks. All right, everyone. Welcome. Our briefing session for the October Council meeting, and I'd like to acknowledge that we're meeting tonight on Wadjuk Noongar land, always was, always will be, and we're having an audio recording of the meeting that will be available on the town's website. We have everybody in attendance this evening. I don't believe there are any declarations from councillors. Nope. I don't have any announcements, unless Riley has some questions. No public questions. So we'll move on to item six, which is deputations. So, Riley, would you like to come and join us? So, Riley Murphy, as you remember, is the son of the owners of the property at 1 River Street, which is the subject of report 7.1 on tonight's agenda. So welcome back again, Riley.
Thank you.
As usual, you have 10 minutes to speak to us, up to 10 minutes, and councillors may have questions for you. So welcome, and thanks for being here.
Thank you. Well, pretty much already introduced me, and I've seen all of your faces before. I'm obviously back here for the issue relating to my parents' property at 1 River Street, basically to fight the conservation notice recommended in the previous officer's recommendation. Basically just on the grounds that we've demonstrated our cooperation with the council's wishes as per the resolution of item 12.1 of the July 28th Ordinary Council meeting. We've begun planning and we've put forward a timeline, which is a proposed timeline at this stage. It's not exactly final, and that's included in the minutes of the meeting. Just to look into that timeline a little bit, the works we've agreed to and given our expected times for completions are works which we believe are realistically achievable both financially and in terms of time that we can actually complete them. So for the roofing, we have a contractor called Featherstone Roof Plumbing. They have another job to complete first, but they've said that they will be available to begin work between mid-December and early January. We've been looking for plasterers, and so we've actually had a bit of a hard time finding people who are available and interested in doing the job so far, but we're putting in the effort and we're getting the quotes. We plan to get a termite inspection performed by Stewart's Pest Control by Christmas, which was not entered into the timeline, but I've got to twist my dad's arm sometimes. As for the windows and veranda, they're, as I've noted in the timeline, two very large, very time-consuming and expensive projects. And as noted, we're hoping to get some funding first. So on that note, we're very pleased to hear that the state government budget has allocated $1.2 million to the Heritage Grants Program, and we will certainly accept the council's offer of assistance in preparing an application for grant funding, obviously when applications are opened up, and they're not at the moment, not publicly. But failing this, these particular works will probably have to wait or just be digested down into much smaller, more manageable tasks, and I suppose we'll have to work out something in that area between now and then. Again, in my father's words, you can't get blood out of a stone, so you just simply can't afford to complete that, the veranda and windows part of the project anytime soon. Lastly, I'd just ask again for a little bit of leniency. Bassendean has 323 heritage listed properties, 13 of which are on the State Heritage Register, and one of which is obviously my parents' property. The way you decide to act against my parents will represent a sign of what to expect for the 300 other odd heritage property owners, some of whose houses and personal finances may be similar to my parents' situation. Basically, just don't market Bassendean as the heritage Nazi town that rules with an iron fist. I'm sure you wouldn't. It's not the way things go around here, but it could backfire and scare away people from buying heritage-listed houses. So just give us a bit of compassion, work with us and not against us, and show that Bassendean is a heritage friendly town. Together I'm sure we can ensure that heritage is conserved for the community and into the future, and hopefully we can open up our house a little bit more to the public, to the community. And that's basically it. So if you have any questions, that's what I'm here for. Thank you.
Thanks, Rob. Questions, councillors?
I just wonder when the grants were opening.
That I don't know.
Mm-hmm. The opposite way.
through UNED. The state government hasn't announced it on the website yet, but it should be within the next few months.
Thanks. I was just wondering, last time you came and spoke to us, there was some controversy, or not some controversy, some confusion about the requirements for the roofing, the short sheeting and the long sheeting, and you were going to speak to the State Heritage Office to get some clarification. Have you had that conversation and had that resolved?
Well, we simply put in basically our argument for the long sheet into the application, and the application has been approved with those listed materials, so we think it's good to go.
And there was also mention in here about the storm water drainage, and that there'd been some stormwater tanks put in, or soak wells put in. That we didn't have any records of.
Yep.
Has there been any, like, have you got copies of plans or evidence that they've been put in?
Yeah, I did send an email just this afternoon, sort of with the aerial plans of the property, listing the rough locations. Mind you, they've been buried for several years now, but the pipes obviously connect into them, and they connect to the gutters that are already there. We would, I suppose, have to dig them up to confirm, but my dad put them in not too long ago, and I asked him, where was the stormwater going before that? And I believe they were just running straight onto the ground. So they do exist. They're in the ground, and they are marked in a photo that I've sent only today.
Okay, so there's a process here which says that for that particular work there needs to be development approval. So clearly the staff in the administration require that information to be able to do retrospective approval.
Is this for...
For the drain...
The soak wells.
The soak wells. So I'm not sure how you're going to resolve that, but... You know, looking at the officer's report, it says no, it doesn't.
So maybe we can ask the staff.
No, it does. Actually, it's further up.
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry, I thought that was in the second half. Not to worry. Okay, that's fine.
Okay.
Yeah. Any other questions?
So, with the balcony, I imagine that's going to be quite a large undertaking.
Mm-hmm.
Has there been a safety assessment in terms of whether it's going to fall off the building or not?
We did have an engineer's report performed years ago that my dad sort of discarded and thought it was useless, but he's done it. It's we have a report. Of course, it was a while ago, and they did recommend a few things, like shoring up the banisters of the railing of the stairs, and shoring up the main beam. I think these are things that I'm honestly not too sure how expensive they are, and they seem to be sort of interim stabilisation fixes. I've just got to, so I suppose, push my dad on that to get them into place. But yeah, I think there was maybe a bit of a risk identified back at that stage. But there needs to be some sort of stabilisation works done. Yeah.
I've had quite a few conversations with your parents over recent years, and
yep.
more recently yourself. And you know, it's pretty obvious that this is a big burden for your family at the moment and causing a lot of stress.
Mm.
I'm conscious of the fact that these items on the list here are only the first ones that are identified in the report that will be required over coming years. I know your father in the past has talked about, I just need to sell the property. I'm just wondering what his plans are, because I'm conscious that even if you get through all of this, then there's another lot, and then there's another lot.
Yeah.
It's going to be an ongoing burden.
Yeah.
That, you know, whether he is considered at what stage he might decide that, no, I need the house is ready for me to sell, because he said to me that that's what his ultimate plan is.
Yes, and that is still his current plan. He just wants to do what needs to be done and put it onto the market with somebody who's got a bit more money, I think, to get it up to scratch.
And what is it that he sees as needing to be done before that stage comes?
I'm not too sure. I mean, he has been looking at property websites and putting together a listing, that sort of thing, so I think he really, really just wants to get rid of it. It's weighing him down.
Yeah, understandably.
Yeah. So, yeah, I suppose we'll obviously be working, we'll get the roof done as soon as we can, That's both cosmetic and important for the function of the building. And I assume as soon as that's up, he'll be looking at listing the property. Yeah.
Any other questions?
If that's the case, the first three items, which is the re-roofing, guttering, and repairs to the dining room west wall.
Yeah.
Clearly, you've indicated that those three items you're fine to do it. Also, earlier in your deputation, you said that the termite inspection, you were fine to do that by December.
Yeah.
So if... given that the housing market is such that it tends to be best sales in summer, would you not be better to try and at least get those four items done and out of the way by January so that you can further your father's interest in putting it on the market? Because summertime's the best time to sell, usually, with the market. And the market is going up at the moment. So my question is, would you not at least, with those four items... talk to your father about trying to get them done by January, because that to me means that you then have something that he can move forward with if he is going to sell.
Yep.
I agree that some of these other things may be problematic, but I'm just curious about that timeline. You've got 6 months here, and
that's because we don't want to disappoint. We don't want to say, oh, 2 weeks, and then 2 weeks comes and nothing's done.
Well, the other thought too is doing any of this work in winter. It's problematic as well. That's the other thought I've got. But, you know, that's really dependent on you and your contractors. But it strikes me as a timeline thing. If you have that interest, then these timelines are something that you can work with. But I don't know. We'll have to ask the staff some of the questions as well.
As I've said, the contractor, it's really up to him. He's working on a project down south at the moment. And he said sort of mid-December, early December at the earliest, that he can start working on the roof. And
has he given you a time on how long the job would take?
No.
Should ask.
Yeah.
Because it may not be that long.
Oh, I don't expect it will be. He still has to measure up and give us a quote for scaffolding, but otherwise he's got all the materials lined up, he knows what he has to do. He's been to the property plenty of times. I think you should be able to knock it out quite quickly.
Okay.
Okay, well, if there's no further questions, thanks for coming along again tonight, and I'm sure your parents really appreciate your assistance. We certainly do.
Yep.
As you know, no decisions are made tonight, so next week's council meeting will have a decision on this item.
Yep.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, so councillors, we'll move on to the reports. So 7.1 is this item that... Ms. Murphy's just presented on, which is the unauthorised works at One River Street. Excuse
me,
do you want to
speak
to this at all?
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Not a great deal to add. Obviously, Ms. Murphy's given a bit of a synopsis, and Council considered this as recently as July. So staff simply recommending that two notices be issued, one being for a two-month period for the immediate tasks of the first three dot points there on page 8 of the agenda, with a longer eight-month period provided for the balance, just to acknowledge the scale of the work and the need to obtain development approval for those other works. I can confirm that in terms of the works that are captured in the first part of the recommendation, that is... committed under the recently obtained development approval.
And the
email
today from
the
stormwater, the circles?
When the application was referred to the State Heritage Office, they had no concerns with the stormwater arrangements on the site, which was effectively the plan showing the gutters going onto the site, because the soak wells had already actually been installed. Again, they had no issue with it, so we could issue the development approval. The plan that we've received today showing the location of the soak wells was more for our own records to just make sure that we have that information.
Okay. And can I just seek to understand, obviously the Murphys have requested 6 months, and I understand the strategy of not over-promising and so having a timeline that they think is manageable. Can I just seek to understand the rationale for the two-month time frame from the start?
So, in terms of the 2 months timeframe that's proposed. The rationale behind that was, first of all, because they've already obtained development approval, they don't have the 42-day statutory timeframe for the referral to State Heritage Office, so they can effectively commence constructing straight away. From discussions with the applicant, we were aware that they had obtained some quotes for the works as well, so we saw that there was no impediment to works commencing in the immediate future.
Thank you.
So is it not 3 months from the 6th of October to the 8th of January?
Yes, sir. We're already...
I was just noting that January is not a great year to get anybody really to do work going, at least until mid-June. Most contractors are off from Christmas through to the end of the first week.
Staff recommended two different time frames, the two different tranches of work, but it's up to the council to modify those.
What's the penalty for non-compliance if we issue the conservation management order?
If the notice is issued and the works are not undertaken, it will come back to council to make a decision on whether or not they would like to fund the cost of undertaking the works ourselves. And as a result of that, there are avenues for us to receive the funds from the landowner after we've undertaken the works ourselves. So we would effectively be going after them for the cost of undertaking those works. So we would need to receive quotes of what the costs for that work would actually be, and then make a decision on whether or not we would like to undertake the works ourselves. Separately, where works have commenced without development approval, there are enforcement provisions in the Planning and Development Act for a maximum penalty of $200,000. But because the only works that have been undertaken to date have since received development approval, that effectively addresses the issue of non-compliance in that respect.
And if the CMO is issued, we're looking for commencement, not completion, is that correct?
There's two paths to it. Firstly, with the first order that's there, because they have received development approval, the development approval doesn't require them to actually undertake the works, which is the rationale for actually issuing a notice to ensure that the works are subject to the development approval are commenced. The second one that's there would be, firstly, to order that they obtain development approval for the balance of the works and then to commence those works.
That's reasonable. Councillor Quinton?
I just want to pick up on the point about needing to take over the payment should we have to. Would that have to be a council decision?
Yes.
In which case, we don't usually have a January meeting, so it would probably have to come to the February meeting anyway. That would be the process. Okay. So the other question I have is around structural and engineering reasons. Are there any structural or engineering reasons that we can't hold this off until February?
We're acting on the advice of the conservation management strategy, which recommended those works be undertaken based on visual inspections of the property. So our building surveyor hasn't actually assessed the works from a structural integrity point of view. The advice from the previous engineering report was that the re-roofing would assist with that, because obviously the issues to do with stormwater wouldn't impact the building. Mm-hmm. So we do believe that re-roofing the main building will assist with the structural integrity to hold it in place for a while longer, but ultimately all of those works need to be undertaken to ensure the longevity of the building.
Okay, so we don't have any concrete timeline that tells us that this has to be done by a certain date?
Not from a structural point of view.
Okay, thank you.
Any further questions?
Yeah. I know what the answer is, but I was just wondering, would it be possible for the council to apply for the grant from the Heritage Office, or is that only available to owners of properties?
The owner needs to make the application, but we can certainly assist in the preparation of the application.
Yeah, but it would be in no way would we receive the funding, or would there be any way that if we undertook to actually complete the works that we would be able to access the state grant?
We could make an application, but it's unlikely that we would receive the funding. It's not only available to private landowners, but it's usually only gifted to private landowners.
Just a quick follow-up question on that then. Can the funding be retrospective, or does it have to be for new works?
I would have to check the grant, the conditions on the grant.
Okay.
Okay, if everyone's happy, we'll move on. So item 7.2, this is the driveway planning policy for home-based businesses that we recently had out for community consultation, so that's coming back to us for final adoption. Did either of you want to speak to that policy at all?
Just quickly, Madam Mayor, Council's obviously seen this reasonably recently, the August meeting. It is to fill a policy void and provide some additional decision-making guidance. Two submissions were received in response. One is supporting drive policy and one providing a comment regarding parking. And that was effectively resolved through providing information in respect of the local law. So it's recommended that Council adopt the policy.
Thank you. Any questions? Councillor Wilson?
Thank you, Your Worship. So on page 2 of the policy, at D, there it says does not involve the retail sale, display, or fire of goods of any nature. I guess this question probably relates to the town planning scheme and what might possibly eventuate with that too. So that's delicate. Last crumb. So the last crumb used to be a deli and is in a residential area. Those sorts of delis or those sorts of retail establishments that were set up in the past, if this policy was put through and if the town planning scheme said that residential areas could not have retail sale, does that mean that in future the only place that you could have retail sale of any description would be on in the commercial district?
Thank you. Through you, Madam Mayor, that's not the case. So this definition that you quoted from page 2 is the definition from the scheme of what is a home business. In addition to the home business use, there's also a series of other uses, including home store, corner shop, a few other bits and pieces. So there would be avenues for landowners to apply to do non-residential uses in the residential zone, but if it was being done under the guise of a home business, there would be a prohibition on the retail sale.
So
it would be, in terms of the last crumb example, that's not a home business. That is approved, I believe, as a shop or restaurant.
Originally, we're proposing to have it as a cafe and an additional use under the new scheme.
And then a special control arrangement. So, for example, there was a house on a corner that had one of those corner shop kind of things, and somebody wanted to activate that at some point in time. What would be the process that they would apply to activate that to have some sort of retail?
Through Madam Mayor, they could apply for a home store, so that's a listed use under the scheme, both the current and the proposed scheme. That allows them up to 100 square metres of retail floor area, effectively next to a house.
Right. And home store is not a home business.
All right, thank you.
Any other questions? Okay, so we'll move on to 7.3, which is another draft amended local planning policy for industrial developments. And again, this has been out for community feedback and it's coming back to us for final adoption. Anything you wanted to speak to for this one?
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Again, this has been to Council and advertised. This time there was no submissions received, and therefore it's recommended that the policy be adopted. Noting some communications from the Mayor in the last day or two regarding some slight wording changes to refer to environmental sustainability. Staff have no objections to those changes and can kind of attend to those during the week. And the changes are fairly immaterial and warrant re-advertising.
Thank you. I know I'm very annoying. Any questions? Okay, so 7.4 then, the proposed outdoor eating facility, which is the parklet that's proposed for outside of O2 Cafe.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. We met with the owner of O2 Cafe probably about a month ago now, and he expressed his interest in having a parklet available for his business over summer. So he had a particular interest in having this item on this agenda. So we've been working with him, just seeking revised plans, etc., over the last few weeks to make sure it can make it to this agenda. In terms of what we would assess it against, we don't have any current council or local planning framework that actually formally deals with parklets. We're in the process of preparing such a framework. In the interim, the only thing we can assess it against is the activities and that which are local laws. So our assessment is contained within the report against that. It's been discussed with our engineering services and ranger services, who are both happy with the proposed arrangement. Under the local law, we can issue a permit for a year. So we believe it's appropriate to effectively issue the permit for a year to see if there's any issues that may come about as a result of the proposal. If there are, we have the option to either revoke the permit until he addresses those issues, or we can deal with them when he needs to renew the licence.
Thank you for that. One of the questions that I asked in my email was around the fire pit that's proposed for the parklet. I'm not sure whether the staff received any more detailed drawings, but what's included in the plans is pretty basic. I was just wondering, in terms of safety, particularly for young children and so on who might be in that area, are there any concerns or anything that we need to put in place to make sure that it's not a hazard?
Our ranger services have reviewed the proposal and don't believe there is any hazard. We questioned the applicant as to what it would actually look like. I'm not sure if you're familiar with the fire pit at Alfred's Kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
That's how he's described it. So effectively just a container with a few logs, which will obviously have the fire.
Mm-hmm.
And because he's not intending on burning over summer, our rangers have no issues with it.
Okay. Thank you. Councillor Hamilton?
Point three of the officer's recommendation is that the applicant does not have exclusive or uninterrupted use of the area. The parklet must be publicly available at all times. So I'm assuming that will be part of the approval. If in the future there was some attempt to rope off that area for like private functions, that obviously would contradict this particular approval. So have you discussed that with the applicant?
Yes, through email, we had discussed it with the applicant, and he's fully aware that it needs to remain publicly available at all times. If in the event he did try and rope it off, our compliance officer would remind him of his obligations under the permit.
Okay, good. Thank you.
So is this on the road? How many parking bays is it?
Three beds in the loading bay, just directly abutting Oatree Cafe.
I am correct in remembering we've already approved plans for a parklet in this location in the past.
Just a follow-up question. On the point about consultation, communication and engagement, nil. However, the applicant has advised that they have undertaken informal engagement with adjacent businesses which are supportive of the proposal. Well, can we take any steps to independently verify that?
Yes, we can.
Sorry, good question. Is this, I can't remember which is the one with the dodgy sort of scaffolding sort of supports for the overhanging veranda. I don't think it's O2, but it's pretty close to that, isn't it?
It is close, yeah.
And I'm just a bit concerned about that access and people having to walk around and in and out and stuff that it might prove.
I think that prop is a little bit further down Albert Road, and the parklet is the other side of the restaurant.
Through you, Mayor, Western Power will be undertaking works in the near future to rectify that issue because they're unable to provide power in the event that one goes.
Is that the undergrounding that they're doing in the area?
Are there trees nearby on the footpath there? I think there's one right out the front. Is that obstructing the parklet, or is it very near to the parklet? Do we need to put some protections around that tree so people aren't grabbing it, pulling at it if they're standing in there?
Maybe. There is a tree directly adjacent. It's not that large. we did
still a tree then.
We didn't think that there was any barricades, etc., that was required to retain the tree. That's certainly something that we can consider if you'd like to.
I'll have a look.
In addition, I could remember that it would still be, irrespective of the park that the council does grant a permit, it would be an offence under the local law to damage a street tree, irrespective of the park.
Which, you know, a shop owner, it shouldn't be compliant with if it was someone that was using the parklet, right? So who has the duty of care of the tree? Is it the owner of the shop? Because this is not an exclusive use of the shop, even though he's applying for the permit. So who would be liable?
Through Madam Mayor, it'd be whoever undertook the damage. So just because it's in the vicinity of the business is not liable for the behaviour of the individual in the public realm.
Good luck with that. I'd rather have protection of the tree. Just a question around process. Haven't we done a policy on parklets?
So we had a policy back in August 2019 that came to council as a draft, and we deferred it until these lovely people came on board to look at it, which they're in the process of doing.
Okay, so it's not... This isn't a permit that could have been done under delegated authority. Is this going to have to be something that comes to council every time someone wants to make a permit? That sounds like a barrier for people wanting to apply for permits.
For you, Madam Mayor, I wouldn't expect a huge influx of applications for parklets, but until such time as we have a policy framework in place, it needs to be determined by council. But as Madam Mayor suggests, we are actually preparing an outdoor eating and public trading policy. Ideally, that will come to council before the end of the year.
All right, I will write down that.
Thank you. Any other questions?
In the past, the markets have been held on Auckland for a bit. We've done a bit of a drawing to see if it interferes with the pedestrian thoroughfare markets as it's usually configured.
Mayor, we did have a look, and I've had a chat to the operator or Perth Road Markets about it, who had no objections to the proposal. There wasn't a great deal of separation between where the marquees go and where the parklet would be, but there is a space available on the footpath for pedestrians to meander around. So given the fact that the parklet would be open to the public in any instance in use, and we weren't proposing any bollards or to close it in that respect,
okay, so we'll move on. Item 7.5 is the adoption of our corporate business plan. Could you speak to that, Peter?
Thank you. So this follows the adoption of the strategic community plan back in July by council, which is a 10-year outlook of the aspirations and priorities for council. The corporate business plan has a 4-year outlook and provides a more granular level of detail. First year is quite granular, and then obviously in the out years less so. It aligns to our resourcing, so our staffing, our budget, and so on. It will be updated yearly as is required to reflect changes in the environment, council priorities, resourcing. Monitoring and review of the plan will occur on a quarterly basis through a new quarterly reporting regime, and there's a number of success measures that were endorsed as part of the strategic community plan that are yet to be developed, so the accounting rules, systems, processes and so on. They won't be reported on necessarily on a quarterly basis because they are strategic measures, but they will recognise the shift over time. There are a number of questions that came through today, which I provided responses to all councillors, but if there's any other questions, I'd be happy to answer them. Thank you.
You've answered my questions, so other questions? Cass Hamilton?
So those responses today, there's a few there where you've agreed to amendments, so obviously the document that will come through at the end of the week will be updated with those amendments. Good, thank you.
And is there still a chance, though, for further amendments?
within the week, or is that going to have to come back to council for us to change?
If there are any questions or any matters you'd like to raise, I'd be pleased to respond.
It's only around wording. Now I won't be able to find them, and everyone's looking at me, and the pressure is on.
Even if you would like to send them through during the week.
I will send them through.
Thank you. Everybody else happy?
Sorry,
what? Have you found it, Sarah?
No.
I don't think so. What's the question?
I remember if we had a workshop on this document.
No, it was distributed to councillors a couple of weeks ago. We didn't receive any feedback, so it's been brought direct to council. But it aligns to the budget, CEO performance agreement, a number of other aspects. There's nothing sort of in there that I think should be a great surprise, but if there are any other matters that councillors would like to raise, I'd be happy to receive a call or email during the week. Some of the, actions and projects are at a foundational level because the planning and thinking hasn't been done. Like if we look at the areas of sustainability and environment, there's some work to be done in terms of unpacking what a waste strategy and a carbon emission strategy will look like. So rather than listing a whole host of tasks, coming up with that integrated strategy and then presenting that to council and then looking at the implementation and associated resourcing.
Then can I will just raise my point then. In 1.5.1 on page 20.
What page?
20. Provide a new nature-based playground at Sandy Beach. Is it unreasonable to change that language to complete construction of, or is that not going to happen?
I'm happy.
I'm just asking if that's a realistic statement.
So that's likely to happen next financial year.
Right. Okay.
Would you like
it changed, please. Thank you. And that in develop a public health plan that incorporates a mental health strategy, because that is something as well.
Okay, so I understand that if people have any other
questions or matters they'd like to raise.
Yep. So to email them through preferably in the next 2 days before it goes on the agenda for next week.
That's correct.
Yep.
Thank you.
Okay, so item 7.6, it's the adoption of the delegations register, which we did have a workshop on some time back. I believe there's been some further work done. Peter, are you speaking to this, or is that really?
It might be, yeah.
Lovely.
So I'll start. So this work commenced in 2019, and it really was a ground-up review of delegations. For many years there'd been some incremental adjustments, but this was pretty much a new slate, and it incorporates the powers within the Local Government Act, but a number of other acts as well. So what we found in the old delegations register, that some of those delegations had expired or were no longer relevant, so they've all been pulled out. So what we've really tried to do is look at balancing risk with efficiency and good governance. So we've unpacked the various delegations and in some instances provided some conditions or controls associated with those delegations, so councillors feel they have some assurance or comfort in terms of how that delegation is being exercised. There are a number of questions that came through today, and I'll just quickly respond to them. So there was one around the procedure if councillors wanted to revoke a delegation for a particular decision. So assuming next week the register is adopted, if there is a particular delegation that councillors would like to sort of remove, that can occur at any time through an amendment. So whether it's, you know, contacting the CEO or whether it's councillors raising a notice of motion, that can occur. But also too, with a delegation, if it is a power that's delegated to the CEO and I feel that it is a particularly contentious issue, I would be likely to bring it to council in any event if I believe that there are, you know, maybe some, you know, ramifications that council need to be aware of, etc. So that deals with the procedure if councillors wanted to revoke a delegation. We did compare it to the Welga model template on delegations, some of the key differences. So the Town of Pasadena has included some specific conditions or controls associated with delegations to provide that assurance, so whether it's a policy or a reporting condition, etc. Also, there's been the removal of superfluous delegations that don't meet our needs. So, you know, we're not in Outback WA where we need to refer to aerodromes and crops and things like that under the Bushfires Act, so we've removed those ones. We've also included reference to the record keeping system and compliance links, which weren't featured in the Welga model template. And obviously we've included some financial delegations, so those discretionary amounts weren't included in the Welga template. Just moving on to tenders for goods and services. There was a question around the authority to accept or reject tenders up to the value of $500,000, excluding GST, and in accordance with the requirements of the functions and general regulations. So at the moment, under the regs, there's provision for the CEO to approve tenders up to $250,000. So that was approved during COVID to try and facilitate some efficiencies and get things moving, particularly in the sort of development space and providing work to small businesses and so on. So what we're suggesting here is that be raised to $500,000, and there's no right or wrong answer here. Looking across various other local governments, it varies from $250,000, which doesn't require a delegation because it's a function of the CEO, up to $1 million, and that's obviously City of Perth. So depending upon the size, scale, complexity, risks involved, that is completely up to council on that one. And I guess thinking about tenders and procurement and so on, obviously there are some controls in place in terms of council setting the budget, CEO advising councillors in the bulletin of any upcoming procurement exercises, 20 grand or over. And I guess there's also audit as well. So any of those high-level procurement exercises are often audited to ensure that the appropriate process has taken place. There was also a question around 1.2.15, which is about providing grants, discounts, waiving and writing off debts. So there was interest in the value of $250 being recommended. So currently I have no capacity to waive a fee, and I've currently got a situation where one of our community groups want to activate private parcel of land for the community, and there's a planning development fee of, I think it's about $190 or something, $147. And so effectively what I would have to do is bring a report to council, and we would burn more officer time in doing that than waiving such a fee. So what we're suggesting is going from zero to potentially 250, but we're also working on a policy which would unpack those conditions when that would apply. It's probably going to come to council in December, but I guess what we're asking for is council's permission to delegate that $250 limit to the CEO in the interim, so we can get over this initial hurdle with a view of a policy coming to council in December, which will provide the criteria or conditions in which that delegation can be exercised. There was also a question around the rate record amendment and when would this be necessary. It occurs when someone changes their name after marriage or when there's an executor appointed to an estate or a trustee, and no formal change of ownership's occurred. The other question, 1.2.26, it's around compensation for damage incurred when performing executive functions. So the question is there any reason why councillors would not be informed of when this delegation is utilised? So this is something that could be amended prior to the agenda to include as a condition of the delegation that a report be provided to council on the exercise of the delegation. So we provide a monthly financial report. So where these sorts of delegations involving money are exercised, we could actually incorporate those into the finance report so councillors have visibility of those delegations being exercised. 3.1.2, prohibited burning times. Does the Bushfires Act require this to be delegated to the Mayor, Bushfire Control Officer, rather than the CEO? So the Bushfires Act does actually allow jointly the Mayor and the Bushfire Control Officer. So you may recall at the fireworks some time ago, you and I were basically given the authority, if there was a fire, to shut down the incident. So they were the questions that came through, but I'd be pleased to answer any further.
Councillor Wilson and then Councillor Hamilton.
Thank you, Your Worship. So on page 29, you've got
the report or the delegation?
Yeah, sorry, the delegation register. In the attachments?
In the attachments.
Yeah, page 97 of the attachments, that is.
Yes.
Page 29 of the document. So it talks about the power to invest and manage investments. And I was just having a look through the other documents or policies that would guide how that delegated power would operate. I can't see anywhere there the policy of council or the motion of council about divesting from fossil fuel projects. So I'm just wondering if that gets picked up somewhere else or whether it needs to be included. Yeah.
We could take that one on notice if you like. So there is the compliance link to the investment policy, whether that addresses fossil fuels.
And I don't know whether the motion we passed is incorporated into that investment policy or whether that's something you need to...
I am fairly certain it is, but it was something that we were going to discuss further, I believe. Is that correct?
Thanks, Madam Mayor. My understanding is it is reflected in that policy, Councillor Wilson, and I think the sort of CEO was part of it.
Thank you. Second question. So just on the reporting, so the MRC, for example, provides a report to council monthly, every delegation that is exercised and what the purpose of the delegation was and how it was exercised. Are you proposing to do the same here?
I just don't think that would be feasible. The MRC...
We have visibility over what you're doing.
So that's where the three lines of defence come in. So we have staff that understand their roles and have expertise. We have management oversight. And then we have independent audit and assurance. So that's the assurance that's provided to council.
But independent audits just do samples and they certainly don't go into every single... example of a delegation, and if there's no report, how would they know?
Yeah, so I guess this is where it comes to, I guess, balancing the risk with the efficiency. Just as an example, in the local government world, there's over 300 acts, 300 pieces of legislation we're exposed to. To compare that to the EMRC, which is a 6-member based council, would not have, I guess, the risk profile and complexity that a local government...
It's a local government, not a local government.
But in terms of the reporting requirements and accountabilities, I think there's some difference.
Some of these delegations wouldn't be at all relevant as well. Like all the cat stuff,
exactly.
And the dog stuff and the building permits and all of those things.
Yeah.
So if we were to particularise those delegations that we wanted to be notified about in an exercise?
Yeah, for sure. And I guess with delegations, at the end of the day, those functions that council can delegate are done so, I guess to create those efficiencies in the organisation. If those controls are required to enable those delegations to be exercised, we can certainly put those in place. But I guess it's about coming up with a workable, efficient operating model where council feel that they've got the visibility, oversight and assurance that they need, but also where kind of the wheels are moving as well in terms of the organisation.
Yeah, and because you mentioned, for example, the waiving of a small fee, and I recall a request to waive a fee did come to council, and council did reject that request to waive the small fee. So I guess
that trust delegation that the CEO had suggested would always be reported to council in the bulletin.
But that would be after.
But there was also the policy framework. A condition of that delegation. So we've been working on a policy which we anticipate will come to council in December that would unpack the criteria and conditions in which that delegation would be exercised. So you'd have the criteria and you'd know that I'd only exercise that delegation under these circumstances, but also the condition of the delegation is that reporting back to council.
So I guess sticking with the example of the waived fee, so if hypothetically you waived a fee under the delegated authority and then council was notified about that and then a majority of council formed a view that that fee shouldn't be waived, what's the process for countermanding that decision?
I think the policy which council will approve, will be presented to council for approval, will have the criteria on which that delegation can be exercised. So if you're not happy with the criteria, that can be modified, it can be tightened up, loosened, changed, but the idea is that that delegation can only be exercised if those conditions are met, and then there can be the reporting at the other end.
But I guess there's always an element of discretion in that. So if in the example of, say, the waived fee, council formed the view that the fee should not be waived after you had made a decision to waive it, how does that decision get countermanded?
Well, after the decision has been made, it can't.
I guess if council wasn't happy for that to happen, we'll include that in the delegations register, and then any time a fee was proposed to be waived, staff would bring it to council for a decision.
Yeah.
I mean, I voted for the fee to be waived, but I'm just trying to tease apart. If A, we don't know that it's been done, and B, there's no ability to countermand it, then what sense is council responsible for any of the decision making?
And it's really, I guess, the way I've created delegation frameworks in the past, always looking at the risk associated with the delegation and what's the level of comfort for the oversight body in that delegation being exercised. So having a policy and clear criteria and conditions, so you know, I guess, the circumstances under which that delegation will be exercised, but also at the other end you have visibility of when it's exercised and the circumstances that were at play. Over time, if you think, hey, she's being, a little bit generous with these waiving of fees, that's an opportunity to either tighten up the policy, lower the financial delegation, or remove it entirely. So at the moment, there is no delegation to the CEO for these types of things. And what we would normally do is bring a report to council. Obviously, that would consume officer time. And it's, is it reflective, I guess, of our SCP and what we're trying to achieve in there in terms of, efficiencies and making great decisions and things like that. It's really a call for council at the end of the day.
Any other questions, councillors?
I'd just like to raise a bit of a sort of in the review of the Local Government Act, there's been a report written or a paper written by the previous president of the Australian Local Government Association, wherein he talks about the changes to the structure and possibly delegations as a result of the Audit and Governance Committees in the Local Government. So this is for the current climate, obviously, these delegations for the current climate, but the sorts of things that they were said to be looking at is a general change from of government members to a majority of community members, which I thought would be interesting. I guess obviously there will be their eye on these sorts of things, just something that came up and I thought was
Cassie, do you have a question?
Yes, I'm looking for it, but I can't find it, so maybe someone can help me.
Maybe Sarah can ask while you're looking for it.
Clearly there are delegations, in some delegations that require to be reviewed every year. I'm just trying to find in here, if this is passed, when is the next proposed review period? Is it annually to fit in with some of these other ones that are annual? It's got some of them annual and some are not.
Yes, so as a good practice, we will try to do them annually, so that's a requirement.
Okay.
Last year, because it was a ground-up review, it took a little bit longer than anticipated, and obviously we have new staff as well, so trying to involve the executive team in that process too.
So I can't find it anywhere in these documents, but could it be inserted that there is a proposal to review this annually somewhere in the documents so that we are aware of that?
Yeah, sure.
It's just a little bit confusing because I was looking for it everywhere. So.
Yeah.
I thought it might be, but I just wasn't sure the way it was.
I think the report made that clear as well. It said that last year it wasn't here.
Yeah, I know. It said last year it wasn't done and you had the report that wasn't done.
Mm-hmm.
But because some of these delegations have to be done annually and others don't, I was a little bit unsure, so that's why I asked the question.
Are you happy with that?
Yes, yeah. Perfect.
Sarah?
8.1.4. Did you just read this in your list, Peter? I don't think I heard it. Commence proceedings under the Public Health Act for an offence under the Public Health Act. Can you describe what that might be? What situation that might be? Page 102 on the report, the attachment.
Commencing proceedings for an offence under the Public Health Act.
And I'm assuming that's a new delegation.
It's from the 2016 Act.
Is that something you are able to respond to? So, an example of an offence, for example, Kenmure Avenue, where the property was in disrepair and was considered uninhabitable. It's a requirement after we've issued an order that they clean up that property for hygienic reasons, so we can undertake enforcement provisions in that respect under the Public Health Act. There are also different provisions relating to food businesses and food premises, ensuring that they comply with the Food Act, and that relates with the enforcement provisions under the Public Health Act.
All right, so when I read it, commence proceeding sounds like it's something that goes to court. Is that also something that you would instigate without council's oversight?
That is the intent of the delegation, yes.
Wouldn't that require a cost for us to do that, though? And wouldn't that be quite costly for us to take someone to court to do that kind of thing?
It would depend on the offence. So, for example, with the Kenmure Avenue example, in terms of us undertaking the proceedings, I believe that our health officers have the experience to go through with the prosecution themselves and prepare the relevant documentation. But it depends. records on the offence to know what the actual cost would be or if we needed legal representation.
So in that instance then, how much did it cost for us to commence proceedings under using that example?
There came you nothing at this stage because we have prepared the documentation and issued the order to rectify the property. If it was to go to a prosecution, I believe we could do that in-house. So nil for that example. But if there was an example where there was a severe breach of the Food Act and we needed legal advice in that respect, it may come at a cost. But through EMA, it is difficult to give an estimate because it depends on the severity of the offence.
Then, Peter, would it be appropriate to also have a dollar figure threshold for that as well? If it's something that's going to cost the town $5,000 or $10,000 for court proceedings, should council know about that?
What we could do is we could delegate, consider the conditions under which we delegate it, or if it's thought it would be contentious or costly, bring it to council.
Yeah, I just feel like there needs to be some kind of tiers terms of what triggers the delegation or what then needs to come to council, because this might be expensive one day. Would you be able to do the work on that?
Certainly. We could provide some further advice on that.
Okay, thanks.
Everybody okay? Okay, so item 7.7, accounts from September. Kath, are you looking for something?
In an email.
Okay. Alright, so then moving on to the notices of motion. So the first one, 8.1, is from Councillor Wilson in relation to the provision of the 360-litre recycling bin. Is there anything you'd like to speak to about that, Councillor Jeremy?
Sure. Through Madam Mayor, the notice of motion, the technical perspective is fine. We're looking at this as part of our waste plan actions. Anyway, given that there would be significant costs providing a 360-litre recycle bin and the implications for our contract, we would have to bring back through council as a report anyway. So it's
great, thank you. Any questions? Okay, so then 8.2, which is from Councillor Hamilton, it's the recognition of the late Tim McLean.
We can certainly incorporate that as part of the tree planting program for next year and contact the family as outlined.
Councillor Quinton had a question.
What is the process for us naming a street after someone?
I might have to refer to the community planning.
Through Madam Mayor, the Geographic Names Committee of Land Gate sets standards for naming and renaming of streets. Given that we're not involved in any sort of broadacre greenfield subdivision, we're not creating any new streets, but there is an avenue through the GNC to actually rename existing streets if council so chooses, but they will ultimately be the determining body for that.
Would that require a consultation?
It would.
Which would cost money, I suppose.
Well,
you'd just door knock people on the street, wouldn't you? Whatever street it was, as long as it wasn't a long one.
You still have to consult with the emergency authority as well, Australia Post and servicing agencies, but you need to consult with the immediate area as well. So there may not be a large direct cost, but obviously a staff cost that could be pursued. GNC will assess and propose on a number of factors, including whether there is a similar phonetic name in the immediate vicinity. So if it was Smith Street today and then Smith Street in Bayswater, they might to review the application because they'd like to keep a certain street distribution of like sounding names.
I understand.
Thank you. Okay, so then we've just got two confidential items. Would you mind turning the recording off?